The topic of this broadcast is about work-life balance. When we look at the research about retention, staying in your job, we know that about 40 to 50% of teachers will leave within the first 5 years of teaching. And we know that most of them will say they're leaving because of stress. When we look nationally at the research that's being done, we see that almost 90% of teachers, and these are teachers who have more than 10 years experience, more than 90% of them will say that they do not have work-life balance. So clearly, the notion of balancing your professional life and your role as teacher is not always easy to achieve with having a full and satisfying personal life. So that's what we're going to talk about today, and how we create the conditions where we can not only engage in both our work and personal lives, but that we can sustain it. Because I think anybody could see themselves doing both for a short period of time. But what we want to talk about is building this work-life balance so it's sustainable for the long term. Right. So let's talk about that, Kathy. Can you relate to this struggle for work-life balance?
Yes, I can, Susan. I remember, you know, wanting to be a teacher since I was a little kid. And even 30-some years ago, it was very difficult to get a job. And I was one of the lucky two to be hired in my particular board. With nobody behind me for a number of years. And so that was a pretty significant responsibility in a way. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the day that I was hired, I was explicitly asked if I would commit to coaching. And I had coached all kinds of teams prior to working in a school, and I was only too happy to agree. And so I did. I started in the early part of my career. I was coaching a number of teams, and
but this was like it was kind of an informal condition of the
absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely, it's not. Yeah. It wasn't written into your contract or anything. Yeah. But it was clear that they were looking for people, and okay. You know, the hiring had been slow for some time, and I suspect that mm-hmm. some people who had been coaching for a number of years had perhaps stopped.
Okay.
I can only speculate. As to what the mm-hmm. reasons were for the shortage of coaches, but I would suspect that that would be one of them. And, you know, as I worked in those early years and changed schools every year, you start to get a feel for the culture. And one of the things that I came to understand is that there was a growing resentment on the part of the single or childless teachers. That they were expected to do more coaching because they were believed to have the time. And I remember thinking that that was something I had to remember because I wanted children. I didn't have them at the time. And so I had made a mental note that having children was not going to change my professional obligation.
You were going to do it all.
I was going to do it all. And so when I had my first child, I was home for a full year. And when I returned to work, I returned to my normal schedule. I dropped my son off at a babysitter's before breakfast because I coached at 7:30 in the morning for practices. Games and other practices were held after school, sometimes at other schools. And so I was arriving home typically at 6:30 or 7 o'clock. And then I would spend about an hour with my own child before his bedtime and then start prepping for the next day. Now, you don't need a crystal ball to know that it wasn't long before I was exhausted and overwhelmed with guilt at how little time I was spending with my own child. The time I was spending with my students became even more stressful again when we entered contract negotiations and with both the board and the province, and it turned quite nasty. So every day on my way to work, I would hear radio talk shows where people were calling in trashing teachers.
Right.
And talking about how easy we had it and how little time we spent at the school. And I just remember feeling that I can't give anymore.
Right.
And I remember going out the door right after school on Tuesdays, for example, to get to another city where I was doing my master's degree, and hearing a comment by somebody coming to pick up their child that it was really nice that I could leave so early without having any understanding of where I right. was going and the arrangements that I'd made with my principal and or any of the other time that I was putting in or the weekends that we were spending at the school working in the classroom. So I just felt that I got to a point where I felt like I was giving more of my life to work than I was giving right. at home, but feeling like neither was getting enough.
Right. And so many layers of complexity there too,
mm-hmm.
in terms of your own view of self as mother,
mm-hmm.
and as part of your own family, your own personal relationships, mm-hmm. and then really having the burden of care of students, because there was the expectation that you were just going to continue on
mm-hmm.
doing all the coaching and doing all these mm-hmm. things that you had begun, because mm-hmm. People expected it.
Mm-hmm.
So you had that burden of care. And then this added layer of the way that you were being looked at and people making assumptions. So many what we would call microaggressions,
mm-hmm.
That we can only stand for so long before it's not sustainable
mm-hmm.
in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thinking about all of those things that you were experiencing, the time with your own family, the time with your son, that was the first thing you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. So that was the most pressing.
The most pressing thing.
Where the guilt was the most overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
My husband could cope in right. the short term.
Right.
I'm sure it wouldn't have been sustainable either. But it was the mother guilt that I felt
right.
most pronounced. And, I mean, not because he was doing anything to make me feel
yeah.
that way, because
yeah.
he was too young
yeah.
To verbalize anything anyway. It was my own desire to...
Mm-hmm.
to be his mother and to spend
right.
that time with him that came into conflict with my love of my job
right.
and my commitment to my students in a context where it felt so underappreciated
mm-hmm.
that you started to ask yourself, what am I doing?
Right. So you had this expectation of yourself that you would be able to
mm-hmm.
do it all, that
mm-hmm.
you would be able to cope with it all and be superwoman.
Yeah, naive first-time mother.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the most important thing about being a superwoman is knowing when to take your cape off
mm-hmm.
and when to park it by the door. But it takes a lot of reflection, and often we need to get really low on our resilience and lower on our reserves to reach out to someone who can help and
mm-hmm.
say, I can't keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you respond? What did you do, or what did you change?
Well, I mean, I had many conversations with my husband
okay.
about how I was feeling
mm-hmm.
and how I wasn't feeling like I was doing anything well.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was a nasty feeling.
Right.
And so we made the decision to have me go half-time. And it was a decision that we didn't take lightly. I remember many of my colleagues saying, oh, you know, you're so lucky that you can go half-time.
Mm-hmm.
And luck had nothing to do with it. It was a conscious decision that we made with significant financial
mm-hmm.
Changes.
Right.
But the financial part wasn't as important as the rest of it.
Right.
And so by going half time, I was allowing myself to feel
right.
like I could achieve both in a more, in a healthier way.
So terrific that you had that personal relationship, that strength relationship with your partner, that you could have those conversations and that you were willing to compromise on the financial. But that had to be difficult for you to start entertaining that suggestion, that you go from doing it all to doing the work part half time.
It was. It was not an easy decision. In part because of the way that our profession is structured, to go half-time, believe it or not, meant that I also had to change division because I could not go half-time in the grade that I was currently teaching. And given that I had already changed schools and grades so often and was worn down from that, to be honest, the fact that my decision to go half-time would bring about another change was something that I also had to think a lot about and be sure that this was going to be a good move.
And a difficult one in a time where coming to find a job was very difficult, as it still is for many people. To find a job, whether it's full-time or whether it's consistent in any way, is difficult. So I think it's difficult for people to speak their needs when it comes to that because there is such a scarcity of jobs, or certainly finding the job that's going to fit with your family and the location you need to be in and all of those other things.
Well, I had been at so many schools by then that I suppose there was a part of me that had noticed that it was the rare teacher who taught with great energy and enthusiasm to retirement.
Okay.
I saw quite a number of teachers that I would describe as more on the burnt out end of things and that were no longer deriving joy out of the job, but perhaps staying in it because it had a good pension, and some of them would even express that, and and I felt that that was not the place that I wanted to end up. And again, there are trade-offs. My pension suffered as a result, which is fine, but some people are maybe not in a position where they can take that risk or make that choice. But I knew that this job was demanding enough and the students were worth getting the best of me. The, you know, someone who was engaged in the work that we're doing. And I could see already that if I didn't make a change, I ran the risk of being burnt out, and I didn't want that.
Being one of those people who are represented in the statistics where they end up leaving the profession because it has become too much and they can't see any other way out but by leaving it totally. So creating the conditions for yourself so that you could keep going and that you could have some semblance of balance so that both parts of your life, the professional and the personal, were in places where you felt like you could cope and that you could sustain it is really, really important. You mentioned that you made some changes in communicating with your partner about that and that was okay. But what happens, do you think, when we ask our colleagues or our leaders to help us with changes in the workplace? Is that possible?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up because schools are typically not very flexible places. The schedules are set the year prior, generally, with some exceptions. And especially people that are working full-time. You know, the day is organized in blocks of time and it's predictable and it's difficult to make shifts. However, I have worked in a number of settings where we planned for absences we planned for giving teachers a little bit of flexibility. So if someone really wanted to go and see their own child's kindergarten graduation, for example, mm-hmm. They could make arrangements with another teacher who happened to have prep at that time, which means that prep got done at night at home. But they could do a little bit of coverage as long as the principal knew about it in advance. So that was one example. But another more important example to me was when I had a mother that was ill. So I was teaching at that time in my half-time role, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings. My mother became seriously ill just after my dad had had a heart attack. And she lived a couple of hours away. And so suddenly, you know, I was feeling the need to help care for both of my parents.
Yeah.
And I was 2 hours away. And so my principal said to me, listen, I get you 2.5 days a week. What if you were to group your 2.5 days into the middle of the week and then you could maybe take a long weekend and go home and look after them for a few days, have a day to come back and get yourself organized and do whatever you need to at home, work here for a couple of days and then carry mm-hmm. on. And I can tell you that she got more out of me
mm-hmm.
because of her willingness
yes.
to be flexible, because I was so thankful that right. she'd given me that opportunity to do things differently, because it allowed me to cope throughout that mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. As a result, I mean, if you think about statistically, I never missed a day of work.
Right.
I was able to cope through a very difficult period in my life, and I was forever grateful to her.
It's incredible to imagine that this takes us by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, a boss, an administrator, could be so responsive to mm-hmm. the needs of an employee. But as you point out, the school is organized in such a way that it doesn't really lend itself to that kind of flexibility. But it sounds to me like there's a good combination of flexibility on both your part and your principal's part, and that together you came up with a way forward.
Yes.
And that's really critically important. Mm-hmm. The willingness, the openness to state your needs as mm-hmm. a teacher and somebody who needs a change, as well as the willingness and the flexibility on the principal's part to see a different way forward
mm-hmm.
is something that we can suggest, we can advocate for. Because if we don't communicate our needs to our principal, then how are they to know that we're struggling or mm-hmm. that we need something different? Mm-hmm. But it does require a certain sense of bravery to mm-hmm. do that, particularly in a time when jobs are hard to come by and mm-hmm. we're worried about that negative appraisal of
mm-hmm.
others.
Mm-hmm.
So well done for doing that.
It was I would not have expected
right.
the reorganized day. So you're right, it came as a surprise, but
yeah.
one that worked out very well.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, thanks for sharing your story. We'll code this one under workplace health and safety, teacher stress, and work-life balance.